Okay, it is August 15th, 2017. Today, Giancarlo Stanton hit a home run for his sixth game in a row. That's his 44th on the year. And Aaron Judge, he of ESPN proclaims him the greatest baseball player in history fame, struck out for the 32nd game in a row. Josh, you want to tell me what these two events have in common?
It is the advent of the launch angle.
The launch angle at Revolution. And just to be clear, these aren't the only two guys, nor is this exclusive to home run hitters within baseball, is it?
No, I mean, we can look back in the last couple of years, and I think before people were calling it the flyball revolution. But we really realized that the emphasis not necessarily is in just hitting the ball up in the air, but trying to hit the ball within a specific launch angle off the bat that maximizes the chance of hits and then, you know, valuable runs coming from an at-bat.
Right. And just to be clear, this is something that players and teams are intentionally doing. It's become like the new Moneyball thing. But just so we're clear with our listeners, all, you know, five of them who listen to our podcasts.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
What's up? Nothing in baseball is ever new, and launch angles have been around forever. I mentioned Moneyball. The original Moneyball move was the Oakland Athletics exploiting undervalued skills like getting on base to be able to acquire players cheaply. Things like on-base percentage platoon effect have been described as advantageous as far back as Branch Rickey in the 30s when setting up the St. Louis Cardinals first farm system. Pitchers targeting strikeouts over ground balls has been around for years. That was a big move with the Yankees of the 50s and the 68 Miracle Mets. Now every team's doing that. Fly balls have become the new thing for teams in baseball simply because they lead to more hits and more home runs and more extra base hits. But that has been described as being advantageous going as far back as Ted Williams. Ted Williams was on that game in the 40s and even described it in his book in 71. Was it The Art of Hitting?
The Science of Hitting.
The Science of Hitting, which he described that batters need to try to swing their bat on the plane with which the ball descends, and also hit with authority, which is the other part of the flyball revolution. You gotta hit it hard. But in general, this is just really a more scientific way of describing the classic baseball knowledge. Hit it hard and hit it where they ain't.
Yep, exactly. I mean, most people growing up remembers their coach telling them that, you know, you got to get on top of the ball. Make sure you get on top of the ball. Hit the ball on the ground, you know, make them make a play. And I think, you know, when you're in Little League, when you're in high school, hell, even when you're in college, this works because you're hitting it at, you know, athletes that aren't exactly in their prime and aren't the most sure-handed, and errors are likely to occur. But, you know, in the pros, the athletes have just gotten so good and so athletic in recent years that it's rare to see the slob out there who has no glove, who can't handle himself and make plays out there. And, you know, you obviously don't want to hit, you know, pop-ups and fly balls too much because, you know, anybody can really catch a can of corn coming at them. But now that we have the ability to look at StatCast, we have the ability to look at a lot of data and understand kind of what the results are of a mass of fly balls over a season's period, we're realizing that, you know, there's an optimal way to hit a baseball to almost not necessarily ensure, but, you know, maximize your chance of getting on base and, you know, producing runs for your team. And it's, you know, for hitting, basically you're looking to launch the ball 20 to 30 degrees off your bat, and you're looking to hit it, you know, above 95 miles per hour. Typically, that'll lead to at least a double banging off the wall or a home run. Or there's actually a funny little gap, I think, between like 80 and 90 miles per hour where you hit like a little duck fart into the, you know, the triangle of death between the infielders and the outfielders. Whereas like if you hit anything in between, it ends up just becoming a fly ball that the outfield can chase down. So now that there's this knowledge out there of kind of how you want to hit the ball, how hard you want to hit the ball, and, you know, basically where you want to hit the ball, it makes it a lot easier to kind of go through and teach hitters, you know, how to attack a pitch and how to kind of change their swing to kind of maximize the chance of them getting on base.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to mention quickly, you mentioned coaches telling you to hit down on the ball. Do you remember those old Griffey tees that everybody ended up using if you played organized baseball that had like the loop with the downward angle?
Yep, staple of my childhood. I was terrible at it.
Yeah, I ruined a couple of bats using those. but if you think about it, those tees are kind of right in what we're talking about, because the way it positions your bat when you make contact with the ball is right in the plane of a baseball descending from an overhand pitcher.
Yep, exactly. I mean,
you know, I think it was just a misunderstanding of what attempting to hit down on the ball does. Because to hit down on the ball, you also have to come up to actually
right.
hit it.
Exactly. I think it's kind of funny. It would get conflated with the idea that, yes, you want to put the ball on the ground, where, no, that's not the end goal that you're going for. You're trying to hit line drives, and hopefully you're trying to hit line drives that get up in the air and carry a little bit, like a beautiful drive if you're, you know, playing a round of golf. But it's one of those things where you see the fact that, you know, we have better athletes now too, and we have better training programs, and we see the ability to kind of focus in and hone in and teach players early and get them to understand kind of what is valuable and what's not valuable when coming to play the game of baseball and when you're hitting. And it's translating into just how, you know, players are going up there, the approach they're taking to swing. And we've seen numerous players make large adjustments to their game. I mean, the patron saints are, you know, Daniel Murphy and Josh Donaldson, but we've seen other players.
Justin Turner.
As well. Yep, right up there. We've seen other players basically be able to, you know, the best one, I think, is Zach Cozart. We've seen a lot of players who have been able to become, you know, change from average, you know, slightly below average hitters into, you know, very useful pieces, especially when you consider the positions they play at. So it's us finally kind of understanding what exactly we knew was already there and being able to kind of put a fancy label on it and provide some data that shows it works.
Yeah, not only that, but I think it's also a reaction, like a focused reaction to the increase in defensive shifts we saw at the end of in the mid-2000s, the late-2000s. Teams started defensing shifts. According to Fangraphs, teams today are shifting 10 times greater than they were 6 years ago and 15 times greater than they were in 2000. And that really started to increase in the late 2000s when teams started to realize, especially the Rays, that you can actually track where a hitter is likely to hit the ball and move players slightly around the infield or even greatly around the infield to counteract low liners and ground balls. And that really sapped away a lot of the slap hitters and singles hitters' usefulness in baseball.
Yeah, I thought what's interesting about that is if you go back a few years, remember, we were talking about, you know, banning shifting. We thought that it was a detriment to the game, that it was, you know, basically killing offense and killing the game and slowing it down, because you kind of knew that, you know, we knew where you were going to hit a ground ball. So if you did, you were basically going to be out. Big guys don't want to bunt. They're too slow. Or some of these guys just don't have the bat and ball skills to be able to kind of place a ground ball to the opposite side. Whereas, you know, we haven't had that talk recently because, you know, offense have adjusted. like the game is always changing. All sports are always changing as, you know, new and different athletes and strategies are introduced. And it's no different in baseball. We're seeing the hitters basically realize that, you know, the ground is death. You hit a ball on the ground, you're just not helping yourself. Whereas, you know, you want to hit it where they ain't, well, hit it, you know, 10 feet into the stands.
Yeah, that's the only place where a ball can actually never be caught. So I want to go back a little bit to the very beginning of the flyball revolution. Naturally, the team that got famous for Moneyball, which, just to be clear before we get any commenters saying that Moneyball is on base percentage, it's not. Moneyball is the using your knowledge of the game to find undervalued players. It's got nothing to do with any one particular stat. But Billy Beane and his boys in Oakland got another one. They, in the early 2010s, started picking up fly ball hitters more than other teams. They won the division in 2012 and 2013 after they signed Johnny Gomes, Josh Reddick, and Jed Lowry, as well as Josh Donaldson. And I think they also had Justin Turner on those squads. They definitely had Derek Norris.
Well, they've continued it, too, with Chris Davis coming out there, Marcus Semien as well.
Yeah, but they were unsurprisingly really the first full organization to value the fly ball.
Billy Beane, ahead of the curve.
And then a lot of guys in modern baseball also trace it back to Marlon Byrd. Marlon Byrd in 2012 was serving a 162-game drug suspension. He started working out with Doug Latta, who has since become like the go-to off-season hitting instructor for all the big stars in baseball. And Doug Latta really adjusted him to the idea of hitting the ball in the air. And Marlon Byrd, who then went to the Mets in 2013, saw the best season of his career. He convinced Justin Turner, who was then like a fringe average major league player, to become. Justin Turner has now become an all-star and one of the anchor points of the Los Angeles Dodgers, we talked about last week, being one of the greatest players in baseball. And he started working with a guy by the name of Daniel Murphy. And Josh, you can take care of telling us where Daniel Murphy's gone since then.
Well, it was funny because Daniel Murphy, I mean, you know, we all thought of him as like the quintessential replacement player. He was the guy that, you know, you knew that if he went down, you brought up a minor leaguer, you would basically get the same thing. He just had the experience of being up there. He was who we thought he was. And, you know, everyone remembers that he was breaking out during the playoffs, and especially in the World Series, on the way to the World Series. But he had actually, in the last month before that, had also seen his exit velocity, launch angle, and just his overall value offensively start to increase significantly. So, you know, it was one of those things. I understand why the Mets, you know, weren't really willing to pay him off of just the quote-unquote heroics that he had in the playoffs. But it was a great pickup by the Nats to realize that, you know, this big of a change wasn't just a fluke, but that there was something that you could point to and say, hey, look, this is why he started having more success. And, you know, that's only helped the Nationals in a myriad of ways as he's come through and been able to espouse the same knowledge to basically, you know, like a couple MVP candidates in Ryan Zimmerman and secretly Anthony Rendon. And, you know, I mean, we've seen that lineup basically just turn into the, you know, Murderer's Row 2.0. As they've just been pounding the ball this year against all types of pitching. So it's interesting that we've been able to kind of see the lineage of this kind of thought take place. And as it's kind of grown through the league, and we're able to kind of, you know, even pick out who has specifically benefited from it. And, you know, I know everyone wants to say that the NFL is a copycat league. Once one team has something that works, everybody else do it. But, like, I mean, that's all sports. You're trying to win. You're going to do what winners do. And people have noticed that, you know, there's been a lot of winning teams that have been able to survive by just trying to do these home runs or die. And so that's starting to become the norm now as you look around the league. I mean, I went to a Potomac Nationals single A game the other day, and there was a runner on second with no outs, and the batter bunted. And it literally shocked me. It literally, I just couldn't comprehend like what was going on. I just hadn't seen that in so long. And it's because, I mean, you know, those guys aren't necessarily the best hitters. They're on their way to being that way, but they're trying to win too. But it's because the hitters that we have in the pros are so good and they're able to control their swings and their body so well that, you know, it's a theory that worked. It's holding throughout the league.
Yeah. I just want to throw some numbers on top of, your story about Daniel Murphy. In 2015, as you mentioned, Daniel Murphy was, I mean, he was a little bit better than replacement, but he was kind of like an average second, third baseman utility guy.
Yep.
He slashed .281, .322, .449 in 2015, with 14 homers. He hit 42.8% of his balls in play on the ground and 36% in the air. That was in 2015. In 2016 in Washington, he flipped that. 36% of his balls in play were on the ground and 41.9% were in the air. And all of a sudden, his slash line jumps to .347, .390, .595 with 25 home runs and 104 RBI. And that corresponded with a 5-degree jump in his launch angle. And as you mentioned, he got into Anthony Rendon. Anthony Rendon saw his launch angle increase from 10.6 degrees in 2015 to around 17 degrees this year. And he's since seen a 91 point on base plus slugging percentage jump. Ryan Zimmerman, as you mentioned, has seen his launch angle go up 7.8 degrees. And before he started striking out like Aaron Judge, he was an MVP candidate. He was hitting .368, .409, .709 all the way through June 5th. And since then, he's dropped off to very human averages because, like I said, he strikes out a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he does. And that is kind of the downside of the approach. I know baseball purists are kind of wringing their hands over the fact that, yes, there are more strikeouts in the game now. Yes, you are seeing a lot less small ball being played. But it's just kind of one of those things, you know, at the same time, you're complaining about these one or two plays that happen over a game a bit more often than usual. But over the long haul of the season, you know, the numbers bear out that, you know, your team's just going to score more runs. Your team is going to be more successful in bringing those runners in by going out and just letting your hitters hack away rather than, you know, dropping down bunts or whatnot. So, I mean, back to the Nats, it's one of those things for me where you have three or four guys, and actually maybe even a couple more when you look at Adam Lind coming off the bench and Michael A. Taylor kind of coming out of nowhere. You have a bunch of guys who are having basically the best game of their season. Best season of their lives. And I know hitting's contagious, but usually, you know, if that many people are kind of breaking out of nowhere or having that much success, you look for some type of reason to be able to say, hey, what's going on here? And, you know, Occam's razor, the easiest thing to do is say, Daniel Murphy brought some knowledge with him and everyone seems to have bought in.
Yeah, it's very easy to see why or to make those connections and see why. But I think there is something to the idea that in the StatCast era, teams and players are individually able to have more data and see exactly what works. And there is definitely truth to one guy is spreading the gospel as much as others. But
it's a bunch of them. It's definitely multiple guys. I mean, we could go through the Los Angeles roster and see a bunch of guys who have been able to benefit from the knowledge. And, you know, if we want to sit here and say that Justin Turner is the one who brought it along, I mean, we can do that. But it's definitely been almost like a contagion around the league, kind of spreading out and, you know, infecting every clubhouse and spreading to every player, or at least almost every player.
It is everywhere. I mean, the Astros do it a lot too. Jose Altuve actually led the league last year in hits that where the launch angle was between 15 and 30 degrees. Now I want to bring you back to our very first topic of discussion, Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton. We mentioned strikeouts before. Those are two huge strikeout guys, Aaron Judge more so these recent days, since pitchers have started to figure him out a little bit. He is still a rookie, so he'll probably get better in the coming years. As a Red Sox fan, I hope not. Knock on wood in case that comes back and bites one of my players. But he's really just a factor of him being exposed a little bit as a rookie. But Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge has 36 home runs. Giancarlo Stanton has 44, we mentioned. And those two guys are two of the leaders in the league in average exit velocity and percentage of balls hit in that sweet zone of 25 to 30 degrees launch angle.
The barrels.
Which really shouldn't be surprising based on what we've just talked about.
Yeah, no, it's pretty impressive. Like, you know, number one, poor Aaron Judge. You should clearly never do the home run derby. Just bad for you, right? Just bad for you.
Ignore
the random amount of success that Giancarlo's been having. The home run derby is bad for you, right? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, honestly, it is kind of one of those things where these guys are kind of – I don't want to say like the next generation of baseball, like we're going to have that at every position or whatever. But you're going to have some large guys who can come up here and mash balls. Like you also look at a Joey Gallo who, you know, he might not make a lot of contact, but when he gets one, he gets a hold of it. So it's just kind of impressive to me. And, you know, Aaron Judge is going to get better. I think, you know, when he first came up, he had a big hole in the swing on sliders to the outside part of the plate. Now he's a long arm guy. You see a lot of guys actually trying to attack him inside a little bit and try and beat those long arms. And, you know, he'll make the adjustment at some point. But, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, it's nice to actually see him, you know, have a healthy season, get to play healthy, and kind of deliver on the Stanton that we all hope to see. And, you know, it's a testament to the fact that, you know, even though he's going to have some strikeouts, I mean, a dude who comes out and hits 44 home runs and is on pace for 60 is valuable to your team. He just is.
Yeah, now I want to switch gears a little bit here. And I want to bring up an article I saw today in ESPN. Well, this isn't actually switching gears that much. ESPN today published an article, MLB's 2017 All-Surprise Team. These are the MLB's like breakout players who nobody really expected to be that great. And I'm going to read off the list of names they have on this list, and I want you to tell me what they have in common. First base, they have Justin Smoke of the Toronto Blue Jays. Jonathan Scoop of the Baltimore Orioles at second base. Travis Shaw of the Milwaukee Brewers at third base. Zach Cozart of the Cincinnati Reds at shortstop. Chris Taylor of the Los Angeles Dodgers in left field.
It seems to me like those are guys who have kind of figured out how to put the ball in the air, kind of falling back with what we're saying.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
So read off just a few stats from those guys. Justin Smoke, career high of 20 home runs before this season. He's on pace for 44. Jonathan Scope has 25 home runs this year. And he's making contact a lot more and hitting the ball in the air more, which is his big advantage. Travis Shaw has become a launch angle guy in the last 2 years. He's did that by stopped swinging out of the zone. But Cozart is the big one. Cozart and Smoke are the most interesting to me. Between 2010 and 2016, Justin Smoke had a 95 OPS plus. For those of you who don't know much about OPS plus, anything below 100 is below average. He He had a 95 OPS plus mm-hmm. as a first baseman from 2010 to 2016. Zach Cozart from 2011 to 2016 had an 82 OPS plus, which is really bad. This year, Smoke's OPS plus is 148 and Cozart's is 153. And a lot of that... Go ahead.
Which is... I was just going to say, it's amazing. I mean, if you try and go back in time and you were to tell me that Cozart is hitting 50% better than the league average player, I would have laughed at you. I would have
laughed at me too. And a lot of that has to do with guys being able to barrel the ball really well in their past and mm-hmm. were maybe swinging too much or hitting at a bad angle. And they've made the simple adjustments of shrinking their swing zone, being more selective hitters, and hitting the ball in the air. And that's really turned guys from being below average players, or at least below average hitters, into all-stars.
Yep. I mean, looking at Cozart again, you notice that, I mean, for the first 5 years of his career, he was basically having a hard hit percentage of roughly around 24%. And over the last 2 years, that number has jumped up above 30. It's a pretty big jump. You also look at the fact that for him, his ground ball to fly ball ratio was easily over 1.2, 1.3 for the first 5 years of his career. And recently, it's been less than one. He's hitting more fly balls than he's doing ground balls. And by no means do people think of him as being a power hitter or somebody who should be trying to, you know, go for the fence on every mighty hack he takes. But at the same time, I mean, he's been able to be much more of a valuable player by just looking to kind of elevate the ball and, you know, hit it hard.
So I want to close off this brief discussion by maybe thinking of or pointing out a guy, maybe a couple guys, who we think could benefit by making the adjustment next year or even as the season goes on. I have one. Do you have one off the top of your head?
Joey Votto. He needs to get better, man. He needs to get a lot better.
Right, because...
Just he right. can't make Joey contact, Votto, right?
He just doesn't get on base enough.
Who did you have in mind?
In all seriousness, I think Xander Bogaerts needs to start hitting the ball in the air. We already know Xander Bogaerts, when he's good, when he's hot, is a contact machine who hits the ball really hard. His career average exit velocity is only around 88 miles per hour, which isn't great. That would lead to a lot of flyouts, but
right.
he hits a lot of balls between 95 and 100 miles an hour. A lot of balls. But he tends to hit them around 10 to 15 degrees. And I think as a right-handed hitter playing in Fenway Park, if he raised that to maybe 17 degrees on average, we could really see him turn into a doubles machine, especially with the monster and the weird angles out in the outfield.
Exactly. I mean, he needs to just bang it off the wall about as much as possible because, you know, you don't have to be the biggest guy to at least be able to hit it 10, 20 feet up the wall where they can't catch it and, you know, guarantee yourself at least one bag more often than not get two of them.
I think the other thing that would do is by adjusting his swing to be more angular to try to put the barrel of the bat on the same plane as the ball, It would adjust his swing plane down and allow him to really get after those low outside pitches that he tends to get beat on.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy, and we were laughing about this earlier, there's a couple. I'm looking at my 2016 average exit velocity leaders. Cameron Ruff was the hardest hitting based on average exit velocity hitter in baseball in 2016. By the way, Ryan Zimmerman is also on this list in the top 10. See what he's done this year after making the launch angle adjustment.
Yep.
But Cameron Rupp's average launch angle is only 9.5 degrees, but his average exit velocity is 96 miles an hour, which is insane. Giancarlo Stanton is only at 94.9. And the other one who I think needs to make the adjustment is Christian Yelich, whose average exit velocity in 2016 was 95 miles an hour, but on 103 tracked balls, which is low for him or for anyone, his average launch angle was only 2.6 degrees, which is obviously an outlier, but I think it does seem to signal that he's tending to put the ball low and spray it around, even though he's hitting it really hard.
That's interesting. I definitely agree with Yelich for sure. I mean, he's somebody who, number one, when you look at from a scouting perspective, I mean, he's a slender dude, but he has the length and the structure to kind of be able to, A, put on some muscle, but B, also tap into some natural torque in that length of a body. Yeah, exactly. That wiry frame and be able to kind of hit balls a lot harder and maybe be able to kind of reach for the fence a little bit. He hasn't really adjusted his game to match that expectation. And I think, you know, kind of with the climate that we see now in the league and, you know, the fact that he's also working with somebody like a Giancarlo Stanton, or at least he's on the same team as, he might be able to benefit from learning how to kind of get under the ball and lift it a little bit. Because at the same time, I mean, he still has the, you know, the hit tool and the speed to be able to, you know, collect them doubles and triples, even if he's consistently hitting warning track shots.
Yeah, so I think we could see Christian Yelich, we could see Xander Bogaerts as breakout candidates if they make the adjustment. Some other guys, Justin Bour, for some reason, is not listed as a fly ball hitter per se. Eric Hosmer is in there, although Eric Hosmer strikes out like nobody's business. And Domingo Santana, who is surprising to me because he's listed on this chart as a very hard-hitting player. Average exit velocity of 94.8, which puts him in the same realm as Ryan Zimmerman, Miguel Sano, and Jock Peterson.
That's the name I was going to bring up. I think Jock Peterson is somebody who could benefit from kind of adjustment to his swing. He's a dude who goes down, he tries to get the ball, and he does try to lift it, but for some reason his exit – his launch angle is a lot lower than you would expect.
It definitely is. It wasn't as much last year. I think he's made that he hit in 2015 and 2016. He was not, I mean, he's never been able to hit very well. But in 2015 and 2016, at least for batting average, he's never been able to hit well. He had 26 and 25 home runs, respectively. But he struck out a lot. I think this year he's made the adjustment to try to stop striking out as much, but it's really sapped his power, but he's still hitting the ball really hard.
Exactly.
So he's a guy, if he cuts down his strikeouts and can start lifting the ball more, he could really be a dynamic player, another dynamic player for the Dodgers.
That's exactly what the world needs.
All right, Josh, it was great talking to you. I'll see you next week.
Yep, absolutely.